Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and we are kicking off episode 18 with our usual Sunday morning banter and back and forth with my co-host Matthew Davis as we discuss free agents. Matthew, how's it going?
It's going well. It is currently 6:08 a.m. on the West Coast, so the sun has not yet risen, but I am wide awake and excited to talk about this fab.
Yeah, me too, Matthew. It's going to be an interesting week. I liked in your piece that's either up already on FTN, or if it's not, it'll be up there soon. Please go check out Matthew's piece every Sunday as it gets up there. We're going to talk Fab Week 7. There's only 4 weeks to go, Matthew, and I thought, you know, in my mind I've been, you know, playing and understanding how much time is left in the season, but, you know, really haven't digested the fact that 4 weeks isn't a lot of time. And in this weird, wacky sprint, there's still a lot of ground that you can make up, but it's also closing in on us quickly. So the good thing I think you highlighted is, unless I've missed something, no positive COVID-19 tests recently, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And we can finally put a schedule out there and assume as of right now that all of the teams are going to play and there aren't really any uncertainties moving forward. So we did see, you know, a few games or a couple days of games being postponed due to the protesting last week, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen again moving forward. But, you know, that's not my place to say. But as of right now, it looks like the schedule as it is should be good to go.
No, and it's a really interesting schedule this week. We are treated to five teams with eight games, which is pretty interesting. A lot of AL East teams get off the schneid, and then a bunch in six and seven games. Really, the only one to be careful, I think, of is the five-gamers with the Giants and Tigers. So keep that out. Keep that on the lookout as you get your lineups ready. And let's dive right into 15-team leagues, and let's talk about hitters. Kind of your lowest-end guys. You mentioned some interesting names here. Andrelton Simmons, who plays for, unfortunately, a very poor Angels team that hasn't been hitting super well. Some other names, though, that are kind of interesting. You've got a guy like Brendan Rodgers, who is up for the Rockies, starting to play a little bit. You've got Edwin Rios, who was getting some PT for the Dodgers, and it's going to be interesting to see. I think Justin Turner had to miss yesterday's game with a hamstring injury, and I'm not sure, Matthew, if he is making the IL or if you've heard anything there, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And then just a lot of interesting kind of catchers, as catcher seems to be one of those positions that you've done really well at, but there's a lot of teams like myself that are struggling at the position. So names, you know, that stick out for me, you know, Jason Castro, Yan Gomes, Tony Wolters are there too. Who do you like in that low end group? And is there anybody you're really keeping an eye on as you get to your fab beating?
Yeah, so starting with the Dodgers situation, I have Edwin Rios and Matt Beattie both in that $1 to $9 range, and that's because I think that Justin Turner is likely going to hit the IL. I watched him steal the base, and at first I was like getting super excited to start tweeting out to the world that he stole a base because I had like never seen that before. And then, he pulled up lame, and then they started showing the replay, and you can see where it bit him, and then he kind of gradually went into second base, and knowing him and that he's had, you know, ligament issues and previous injuries in the lower body, I won't be shocked, especially the Dodgers in their depth, that they're going to take it easy on this guy, especially with only four weeks to go until the playoffs. They're the number one seed, so they need to take it easy with their three-hitter, and I expect him to hit the IL, so if we don't see him in the lineup today, that's probably something that you should expect. And knowing how some of these teams work, they likely won't do it until Monday morning when Fab's already ran and everybody's done their waiver wire addition. So I have both of those guys. Rios is supposed to come off of the IL. The Dodgers are off on Monday, but they play the Diamondbacks Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and he's expected to come off the IL there. I know that the first game they play against Alex Young, who is a talented young lefty, so both Rios and Beattie both might not be in that lineup, but they can both play multiple positions, and I think that against right-handed pitching moving forward as of right now, you might see the combinations of both of those guys at some point. And then Gavin Lux is also going to start being thrown into that mix against right-handed pitching as well, and we'll touch on him in 12-team leagues.
Yep.
So I think both aren't going to cost a lot because there isn't anything that's been said about either. Neither are projected or are supposed to be getting full-time run, but if the Dodgers are playing a lot of right-handed pitching, then you are likely going to see both of those guys in the lineup a little bit more than we have in the first part of the season. So both of them can rank in the lineup just elite. So yeah, I like both of them. And then Brandon Rogers, I'm kind of off on him more so now than ever. I was kind of warming up to Sam Hilliard and Raimel Tapia, but it sounds like David Dahl is going to make his way back to the lineup after missing some time on the IL due to back tightness or stiffness. So, you know, anytime the Rockies add a guy, it's already murky. Even when they subtract a guy, it's like, okay, well, how much playing time are they going to get? We don't know. Where are they going to play him? You know, what are they going to do? We really never know what Bud Black and the Rockies are going to do. Yeah. And then when you add somebody back to the mix that you're pretty certain that's going to get that playing time, it kind of makes it more difficult to squeeze some of these guys in that we were already kind of, you know, uncertain of. So I'm kind of simmering on him. Jose Iglesias is off the IL, but he hasn't really been fielding much, and they've been trying to use him as a DH. But when he does play, he's hitting third again. So yep. I really like that Baltimore Orioles lineup. And if that quad does continue to get better and progress, then, you know, maybe he is able to be that full-time three hitter for the Baltimore Orioles. And then Jake Cave is somebody else that I was kind of in on, but now I'm kind of simmering on him as well. And that's because Byron Buxton is also expected to be activated sometime next week. So kind of wanted to touch on those guys, you know, because anytime somebody comes back and they're for sure getting that playing time, then, you know, some of these guys might not even be worth mentioning. So I might even having to delete some of these names just because the additions of Buxton and Dahl coming back. So is there anybody that you – oh, actually one more guy, Roman Quinn. He hasn't been playing every single day, but it seems like his playing time is starting to pick up, and he's fucking fast, and he is successfully stealing bases, and I love that Phillies offense. So if you need speed and you're willing to, you know, eat a couple days throughout the week when the Phillies play, if Roman Quinn is not in the lineup, then – he could provide some speed for you definitely in a hurry. So I like Roman Quinn as well. Is there anybody else that you want to touch on before moving to the next tier? There's not many hitters this week, it doesn't seem like, for me at least.
I would agree. I'm actually really interested on your take in a couple spots because a lot of these names that you've listed are available in both my 15 and my 12 teamer. So let's move in there. We touched a little bit midweek about Brad Miller, the Cardinals offense, man, I watched them lose in extra innings yesterday, and it is an absolutely dreadful offense right now. So Brad Miller's interesting for me, assuming he continues to get some playing time. Other name that really sticks out to me, Matthew, in that 1-5% group is Miguel Rojas of the Marlins. Just an interesting bat, was really hitting the ball well. And then you've got a guy like Nick Markakis. Now, there's a lot of speculation, and it would probably be a waste of time for us to go into all the trade rumors on what the Braves could do. But Nick Markakis, as the lineup is currently presented, typically slots in fifth in a very, very strong offense at the top of that order with Ronald Acuna back. So in that group, if you're somebody that's looking for some pop, who are you picking out of that group to maybe either hit some home runs or drive in some runs for you?
I think it's Brad Miller. excuse me. We've seen him hit every single day in that lineup since August. Gosh, I don't know. 17th, I believe.
Yep.
He's played in each of their doubleheaders. They've had a ton of doubleheaders, and he's playing in all of them. He's hitting. We've seen him hit fourth behind Paul Goldschmidt for the most part. He's kind of taken that spot from Matt Carpenter, who's been somewhat struggling. So I really like him if he's available. I was late to him last week, like we mentioned on the previous podcast in the main events. But if he's available in any of my leagues, I'd like him. And then I was kind of wrong on how boring Nick Markakis, you know, could be. We did mention in the past that if you do need RBIs, that's what he can kind of provide for you. And we're seeing that again. And he's also providing with another solid average. And that's kind of – it's a beautiful thing to see that he can kind of come off the streets and play dad and then come back to the big leagues and continue to hit, you know, above 300. And the steakhouse is open. The Nick Markakis steakhouse is open. So I was kind of wrong on him. My partner, Zach Betancourt, was mentioning him a few weeks ago, and I was like, nah, I think this is finally time, because every single year it seems like we have some Nick Markakis, and, you know, sure. Each night it's like we're sending each other steak emojis, because I'll be sure Nick Markakis got another RBI. So yeah. If you need RBIs and a stable batting average, Nick Markakis is a nice little comforting pillow there. You mentioned Miguel Rojas. He, I think, would have still been owned on most teams and wouldn't have been cut if – he didn't get COVID, because he had started the season off really well. The first week of the season, it was only 10 at bats, but he was hitting 700. He just kind of does everything. He doesn't get you a ton of stolen bases, but he can get you stolen bases. The power a little bit there. Contact's nice. And we see him, even though his knock on him for me is that he's hitting low in that lineup, but he somehow drives in runs at the bottom half of that Marlins lineup. So I like Miguel Rojas quite a bit as well, but I don't think any of these guys are somebody that you need to go out and blow your load on or anything like that, including Joey Wendell. He doesn't play every day. You mentioned Andrelton Simmons a little bit earlier. It's nice to see him back. He's one of my favorite shortstops in the league, but he's kind of like Miguel Rojas, where he's not hitting high in that lineup. So there's kind of an uncertainty or a knock on all of these guys except for Brad Miller. And I might be a little low in my projected, now that kind of thinking about it, you know, having him bunched in with these other guys, I might need to bump him up to the next year. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, they're viable and they're good, or they're fine, I guess. But nothing really sticks out to me where we need to,
go crazy.
Yeah. I think that's going to be safe for the pitching side this week.
Sure. And then kind of the last name, Matthew, Sam Haggerty of the Mariners. So Dylan Moore was a great case early in the year, was playing awesome, injured his wrist. I actually dropped him in nearly all formats. And my larger concern, not only is the injury and his ability to get back on the field, but wrist injuries always scare me a bit when you come back from a hitting perspective. But Haggerty has picked things up right off. He's batting high up in that order, typically where Dylan Moore was, second in the lineup. How much are you spending or willing to spend on Sam Haggerty?
So I think this one depends on where you're at in the runs and stolen base department. But I do like Sam Haggerty. I wish I had the time to do how much – okay, what were the numbers when Tim Lopes was hitting in the two hole? And then they swapped and put Moore there, right? So Lopes was doing pretty good. And that he was kind of, you know, someone being touted a little bit early in the season because he was hitting second every day. And then it was Dylan Moore, and he was doing good. And then it's like Sam Haggerty's now in the two hole for the Mariners, and he's doing like the same thing Moore was doing. Like I'm talking like the same exact like batting average, couple stolen bases a week. It's like every their weekly box scores are like eerily similar. So it's funny how the two hitter playing in the outfield for the Mariners has just kind of been plugged in. They're making contact and they're stealing bases and scoring runs. So until he gets hurt or, you know, moved out of that spot for somebody else that's going to be hitting in the two hole for them, I like him. So I have him in that 6-9% range. I don't think people are going to go, you know, get overly excited about him. I know that he was added in some leagues last week. So last week was kind of the week to get him before, you know, talking about him too much or anything like that. So, if you need the speed, he's fine. I like him, and he's playing every day, so go get him.
Sure. Okay.
That's about it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, there's not a ton to talk about. There is quite an interesting group of pitchers, though, as we look at the list. And I want to get your thoughts on low-end pitchers, because there are some really interesting names. We briefly touched on AJ Puck last week, but he's in here as well. He could be, you know, interesting for the A's. Clark Schmidt is an interesting name. Jesse Hahn got a save for the Royals last night with Trevor Rosenthal being traded to the Padres. although that was kind of a quirky situation. So you also highlight Josh Stelmont. Yoshisha Hirano is back now, I think, and so that makes that bullpen a little bit murkier. So who are you maybe throwing a dart at, Matthew, speculatively in this lower-end group if you're looking to add some pitching?
I'd like to know the status on Clark Schmidt, but if we knew the status on Clark Schmidt, yep, he would cost a lot more than he's going to,
okay,
to cost. So, you know, if you're willing, if you kind of look at your team and go to set lineup trend, and you look and see, okay, my pitching's kind of deep this week, but if Clark Schmidt does get a start, he would be better than, you know, X, Y, or Z. So if that's the case for him, because the Yankees do play a lot of games, so they get the Mets to start off, and then it just kind of continues to go and go and go with them being one of the teams that plays eight games. So that's kind of why I think Clark Schmidt would get the call. And if he does, I think it'd be a nice add. He could possibly get you that win. Jose Cisnero, Josh Stelmont, those are late inning guys right now that could potentially get save opportunities for you that won't necessarily cost Amont a lot. Josh Stelmont has just been phenomenal. He's been one of the better relievers in all of baseball this year. He's holding a 0.61 ERA, and he has 27 strikeouts over 13 and two-thirds innings while only allowing one run. So that's insane. I mean, even if he doesn't end up getting the closer job for the Kansas City Royals, I think if he continues to just pitch in those high-leverage situations and whatnot, I think that he's viable in any league, especially if you're hurting in ratios, which I think we all are. And Trevor Rosenthal was just traded yesterday to the San Diego Padres. So there is an open roster spot there for the closer role in Kansas City. The other guy there would be Jesse Hahn, I guess. We saw him. You mentioned him before we recorded. Yeah. You were watching him pitch yesterday, and we saw him get the save, but it was 9-3 before he came in. So the Royals were up 6 runs, and we didn't see Stelmont come in at first or at all, actually.
Right.
So the game ended up finishing 9-6, and Hahn did get the save. So he's mentioned here as well, but I'm not sure that he's going to be the guy. Just stuff in general would be Stelmont, and then Greg Holland is, you know, he's always got to be mentioned as well, just because Mike Matheny, and he could go that route as well. So that's kind of what's going on in Kansas City. Taylor Williams, I've been a fan of him this season. He had a phenomenal week again last week, and then he had a really bad outing his last time out. And Hirano is back, and he hasn't allowed any runs yet. So they could try and move him there because I think he's on his contract or whatnot. And so they might try and get something out of him maybe. Maybe something small cash considerations or a player to be named later. So maybe they try and showcase him. I guess today would be the day because the trade deadline's like here. So, there's nobody there really. I mean, Clark Schmidt would be the speculation. And then some of those guys, that we mentioned in Kansas City where are you at with, let's segue to the Jose Cisnero. Where are you at with him? And then the Detroit Lions or Tigers bullpen in general.
You know, the arm that I probably like the best that you've got highlighted for 12-teamers is Gregory Soto. But honestly, I think there's a lot of viable options. It's actually a really fun team to watch play right now. It's one of those that, you know, they're not going to win a ton of games, but they called up a ton of youth. I could go with Cisnero as well. Soto, also an electric arm. So honestly, either way, I don't necessarily have a flag I'm trying to plant on this one. But do you have a preference between the two? It sounds like you're Cisnero over Soto.
No. Oh,
okay.
I'm big time Soto.
Okay.
And then actually I would go Buck Farmer, and then I would go Cisnero.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that they could have somewhat of a committee, but yesterday kind of moved the needle a bit for me for Soto because he is a lefty, but I do believe he has the best stuff, and we've seen that this year. And they used him for that save yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was against a righty, lefty, and righty, and it was the thick heart of the lineup. So
yeah.
And he got the job done.
He looked great.
I think he would be the guy. I have him grouped next to Daniel Bard, Richard Rodriguez, and Tyler Rogers. So It just goes to show you real quick, those four guys right now are currently the closers on their respective teams. Daniel Bard for the Rockies. We can say Soto for the Tigers. There was kind of some coach speak there. Richard Rodriguez for the Pirates, even though he gave up two runs and blew it yesterday. There's not really anybody else, you know, viable.
Yeah.
And then Tyler Rodriguez, he's been pretty damn good since a rocky start to the season for the San Francisco Giants, and he got the save yesterday for them. So I have all of them grouped together, and then right below them, I have another one in Rafael Dolis, and I think that he could split some time with Anthony Bass now that Romano is on the IL, including, you know, Ken Giles is still there. So I think Dolis and Anthony Bass are going to be the guys in Toronto, but Bass is higher owned, so Dolis would be the guy to own or to add. He would be the only guy that's available to add, so I think he would be another guy. So that's five. You know, somewhat not viable, but options for you to accrue you saves down the stretch here in the next 4 weeks. So
sure,
don't be shy. It's late in the season. If you're low in saves and you're desperate, go get them. I don't want to say now is the time, because each week we somehow see this closer carousel continue to go on. But you need to start loosening up and go get these closers if you're kind of shy about it.
Nope, totally agree. It's definitely now is not the time to kind of sit back. You got to make those moves because you never know what the last couple weeks are going to bring as teams are getting ready for a playoff push, or maybe they're totally out of it. I couldn't agree more. As you move into the next group, Matthew, there's some interesting – I do want to talk about a couple of arms that, you know, really, really stick out to me. Asher Wojciechowski has been throwing the heck out of the baseball. He's a two-stepper that you highlight, which is also an extremely valuable portion of your piece that you go through all the two-step starters. But there's a couple of two-steppers in there in that smaller range that I really want to get your pick on if you were going to rank from highest to lowest. Asher Wojciechowski, Chad Kuhl, and Trevor Richards. We actually learned, I think, Friday, if anybody watched the Sixto Sanchez and Ryan Yarbrough pitching duel, it was actually Yarbrough threw great, but pulled early with a groin injury, officially landed on the IL. The Rays are just a mess from an injured list perspective. So it looks like Trevor Richards has a home. Matthew, if you're looking for starting pitching late and you're ranking just those three guys, because, you know, none of those guys are super big standouts from that perspective, how would you prioritize those pitchers?
So Asher Wojciechowski and Trevor Richards haven't really been known to go deep into games. So that's kind of a knock on them right away, but their matchups are okay. And that kind of goes the same with Chad Kuhl, but he's slowly getting stretched out there. So out of those three, Asher Wojciechowski, his first start is at Toronto or Buffalo against the Blue Jays, and then it's versus the Yankees. And then Trevor Richards, his first start is at New York against the Yankees, and then his second start is at home against Miami. So all four of those offenses, or three of those offenses, the Yankees for each of them, are pretty damn good. And then Chad Kuhl, he has the best park factor out of all of them, and he gets both of his starts at home. And it's against the Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds. So I think when looking into this week and what Chad Kuhl has been able to do, I would lean Chad Kuhl first.
Okay.
And then watch Asher's his leash has been real short. And I don't know. We haven't seen Trevor Richards go five innings either. So,
yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough question. I guess I would go Trevor Richards just because one start is at home and that start is against the Marlins, I suppose. That's really tough. But though both of them, I don't have either of them, you know, really projected to go high in bidding because of that lack of volume. So, you know, they might not even be able to pose that high win percentage, even though we don't like to project wins. I think that their win percentage is pretty low with them only, you know, maybe even going four innings. So, they are two starts, and maybe they give you a solid eight innings, but the matchups are pretty tough, and the parks aren't as friendly as we'd like. So, simmer expectations there as well.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'm in a league where I'm actually just kind of throwing some volume at folks. So I'm in my mind, I'm mentally trying to get as many innings as possible. And those are three names that stick out a little bit to me. As we move into real quick,
Matt, I'm sorry. Patrick Sandoval's another one. He's a two-stepper, and we saw him get off to a good start. He's kind of been struggling, but he gets a home start against the Seattle Mariners, and then he gets a road start against the Astros. So I think he's kind of in that same grouping as the Richards and the Asher Wodge bunch there. Yeah, and he should be available because people were tired of his shit and they cut him. So. he should be available.
And rightfully so. Yeah, for sure. So as you move to the next group, Matthew, it's kind of a tricky spot before we get to the higher end. You've got Rafael Dolis along with guys like Daniel Bard. We touched on Gregory Soto very briefly, but then a bunch of different arms available. You got Tyler Rogers, who got the save last night for the Giants and looked pretty electric, actually. Twin brother of Taylor Rogers, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what a proud set of parents we got there. How are you ranking those arms, and who are you prioritizing in that next grouping if you're looking for relief pitchers?
Yeah, so I mentioned them earlier, but now that we're at that budget allocation spot, we have them at the 10 to 15% range, and that's only $100 to $150.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also because of how much money is left. You know, if this was at the beginning of the year, the second or third week of the year, I don't think since there's four of them or five of them, if you want to include Dolis, I don't think that we would have seen $300, $400, $500 bids. We've seen $700 bids for closers this year. So the community has been extremely aggressive towards these guys.
Yep.
But now that all of our budgets are kind of drained somewhat, or they are drained, and there's a few options, multiple options, I think that they should just fall in that $100 to $150 bucket.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. There could be a guy just sitting there with $700 left ready to blow his load.
Sure.
So on two of them. But anywho, let's rank them real quick. And I'll start with Gregory Soto, actually. I'm gonna choose him because of stuff. And then I would go with Tyler Rogers because I think that – that was kind of people. He was the guy that people thought was going to get the job before the season began. And then we saw Gabe Kapler fucking get real cute again at the beginning of the year and started having Rogers open games. And that wasn't working whatsoever. And then, slowly but surely, Tyler Rogers has just kind of migrated back to, you know, later in games, high leverage situations, and now he's getting saved. So I like Tyler Rodriguez, and then I would actually go Richard Rodriguez over Daniel Bard, and I think they're very close for me. And I think that's because Daniel Bard's knock is Coors Field, but he's give me Daniel Bard over Richard Rodriguez. So Soto, Rogers, Bard, Richard Rodriguez. How would you rank them?
I would agree with everything, but I am not a Daniel Bard guy. He's blown up on me too many times in the past. I can't argue. I agree with your premise. I would probably flip Rodriguez and Bard, but I think at that point, it's like kissing your sister. It's a non-entity at that point in time. I think the priority arms of those two, you're exactly right. I watched Gregory Soto close yesterday, and that dude is he's got future closer filthiness written all over him. He would be interesting, Matthew, like you mentioned, in quote-unquote a typical year. What would Gregory Soto go for if we were, you know, 6 weeks into the year, right? And you've got people that have, you know, presumably not gone crazy on FAB, and you're not 60% of the way through, but you're 15% of the way through. He would be, to your earlier point, I think he would be an interesting test case to see what truly happens in that spot.
To touch on Daniel Bard, he only has a 4.8% walk rate, and that's significantly lower than his career 10.9% walk rate. So is there a command and control that's kind of, you know, getting figured out there? And if that's the case, especially with relievers, you know, that's something to be seen. He's had a lot of injuries, so he's kind of a guy each week we say anybody with injury, a profile of that, his last pitch could be his next pitch, unfortunately. So That's, you know, kind of a bummer on him. But right now he's boasting a 23.8% K-minus walk rate, and he's not getting hit where on the sweet spot. So he's only allowing a 7.5% barrel, and that's at a 7.2 launch angle as well. So the exit velocity is averaging 88.5. Yeah. So he's not getting hit hard, and he's not walking guys right now, and he's getting strikeouts. So that's the recipe for success as a closer. Yeah. And he's doing that. So I like him.
I will totally own that my dislike of him is irrational. He's just one of those guys for me owned. Yeah, and it's been so bad for me when I've had him that I just am really hesitant. But you are absolutely right. The numbers stack up. That's one thing that we always have to check on is our bias against a player or a team or a manager or whatever it is. He's a guy I need to look into a little bit more, because if he's made a command change, that's a huge win to your point, right, as far as what's going on. So he's an arm I definitely need to probably dive in a little bit deeper. Before we get to 12-teamers, Matthew, the most expensive arms, and one I actually want to pick your brain on more than the other, Ian Anderson and Michael Pineda. So Anderson, I saw, dude was awesome. My co-owner Brian Vogel is a huge Braves fan, and he is so frustrated with these Brave arms that come up in the system, the Kyle Wrights, the Touki Toussaints, that can't throw strike one. I thought Ian Anderson's start was really impressive because he not only pitched backwards like Sixto Sanchez did, but he pounded the strike zone early, which was really impressive for me. And he's had walk rate issues in the minor, so he's an interesting one. But Matthew, I'd like to go in reverse and get your thoughts on Michael Pineda. The Twins are clearly ramping up for postseason play. Pineda should be back. I think he's eligible to be activated. I thought August 30th is what I read. It's very soon.
Tuesday.
Okay, the 31st then.
Yeah.
September 1st. So very soon. He's a guy I actually targeted in drafts when we thought we were getting a 162-game season because the stuff is outstanding, plays for a really good team. What are your thoughts on Pineda, and are you investing in a guy like Pineda?
Yes, if I need the wins and I just need a starting pitcher. I think that the name and the hype is going to start to pick up later today. And the news around the streets that he's going to be, you know, possibly activated, or he's eligible to be activated on Tuesday. His last tune-up, he went 71 pitches, so four innings. Yeah. He's an efficient pitcher. He doesn't walk many guys. He doesn't get hit hard. I think, you know, maybe his next outing he gets 85 pitches and he's able to go five or six innings. And so that's definitely enough to get the job done in the win department when pitching for the Minnesota Twins. And I think that the Twins are going to want to just slot him right away into that rotation. So I'm intrigued by him for sure. And then Ian Anderson looked phenomenal in his first outing. You know, he only allowed that one hit, which was a home run, and he was getting strikeouts against a good Yankees team, we can say. And, you know, only allowing two walks is really nice. And then getting the strikeout per inning is also nice. And the thing that kind of sticks out the most to me is just the whip. So only allowing a hit and two walks, you're going to have a 0.50 whip. And I absolutely love that. And I'm going to adore anybody that's going to be able to not walk a ton of people and get strikeouts. So he's also a two-stepper this week at Boston and against Washington. So tough lineups, but the pedigree and knowing that the Braves need him and what he did against the Yankees, that's going to be a concoction that will likely cost, you know, north of $100 at least. So,
No, I agree. Very interesting arms. Anderson, unfortunately, was scooped up in a lot of leagues. Or will be scooped up in a lot of leagues. He's going to cost money, and I don't have it, Matthew. I'm one of those guys that you tease that has spent a lot of money and been aggressive, so I don't have a whole lot that I can spend on a guy like Ian Anderson. But I was, to your point, I was super impressed. The outing was outstanding, and it's fun to see all these young arms come up because they've been really, really interesting. Anybody else you want to touch on, Matthew, in 15 teamers on either side, hitters or pitchers, before we move on to just a little bit different of a tweak with 12 teamers?
No, we can move on to 12 teamers. There's not too many extra people to add there, but there are a few guys for us to talk about. So, yeah, sure. I'm ready when you are.
Yeah, so let's dive in on the hitting side. Let's talk about some really low-end guys that we haven't touched on earlier. Adam Frazier, he's hitting a little bit of pop lately, which is encouraging. That Pirates offense is really, really bad. I mean, obviously we saw the no-hitter from Giolito, but they've been bad all year long. They're nearly last in every statistical category. Jaime Candelario is a fun name. He popped a home run yesterday. Tigers certainly aren't giving up. And while they miss CJ Cron, still have some bats that are making a little bit of noise. Then you've got a guy like Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals who's trying to jumpstart that offense. Nomar Mazara's back for the White Sox. Any names in that super low end that you're bidding on in the online championship format?
Yeah, if you need a middle infielder, I like Adam Frazier. The Pittsburgh Pirates get 8 games this week. So anytime you get 8 games for an offensive hitter and somebody that's going to be hitting at the top of the lineup, I think that they always need to stand out to you for the volume that they're going to provide. And then Jaime Candelario has looked so much better after everyone has made fun of him for the last couple years on Twitter. You know, he had the pedigree and he was traded from the Chicago Cubs, and it just never really seemed to pan out for the first few years there. The batting average was always quite low, but we're seeing him make a lot of contact. He's making hard contact. The counting stats are there. He has 15 runs, 14 RBIs, 3 home runs now. He's hitting .298. I'm not sure where, you know, we've always kind of projected he was supposed to be like a .270, .280 hitter, and then that kind of teetered off after 2017. So, you know, the only knock on him this week is that he only gets 2 games. So the Tigers only play 2 sure. games. But moving forward after this week, and you know, once the Tigers start to play more, or even this weekend, I like him. I have him in one main event team, and he's been a pleasant surprise for us. He's multi-position eligible at first and third base, so he provides you some value there as well. So I do like him, but the only knock is this first half of the week, they only get 2 games against the Milwaukee Brewers, and you know, he might not be the most viable option this week or the first half of this week, but I do like him. So he's somebody. And then Shogo Akiyama, he continues to get cut because of performance, but the Cincinnati Reds have not given up on him. He's still getting a lot of burn. But it's, you know, if he doesn't get going next week, so I think maybe add him this week and see how he does against the Cardinals and the Pirates. Yeah. But if not, then maybe he starts to lose playing time there.
For sure.
Yeah, these guys are cheap. They're not going to cost you a lot. If you need speed, Roman Quinn again, Cedric Mullins. Another person would be Brandon Belt. However, the San Francisco Giants only get 2 games, so that's his knock, right, is the volume again, is only playing Tuesday and Wednesday. That's just not a lot of volume for me, and especially in a 12-team league. That's going to be an issue. However, those 2 games are at Coors Field, so maybe I revert that on Brandon Belt a little bit in the San Francisco sure. Giants. So 2 games there versus 3 games, right? Right. I would kind of like probably lean Brandon Belt in the 2 games at Coors. So he's been hot too, man. He's he's been really hot. Yep. So as the season is now, he's hitting well over 300. It's let's see here, 329 actually, and the power is there. So he could actually even if it's only 2 games, dude, I might actually need to bump him up a tier because those 2 games are at Coors and he's hot. So let's do that. You can touch on someone else. I'm actually going to slide him into that next tier real quick while you go into that tier.
Yeah, I think the only other name that sticks out for me, Travis Shaw is hitting a little bit, and he's kind of interesting. The more games that are in that Buffalo Park are interesting. We're seeing it play very hitter friendly. There's a lot of chatter when everything was swirling around with Toronto. You know, what's going to happen with this team? Where are they going to play? We're now seeing them settle into Buffalo. It's playing, last time I checked, it ranked third in park factor and fifth in home run factor in the season from ESPN's park ratings. And Shaw looks like he's resurrecting himself a little bit from a hitting perspective. That offense is getting going, even though Bo Bichette has obviously been missing some time. He's hitting usually, you know, anywhere between he's batted as high as third in the last week, down to seventh once, but mostly fifth or sixth. I think it's kind of a fun lineup. So he's a name that I'm a little bit intrigued on because I could use some pop in some spots. What about you? Are you out on Shaw? I know he was so bad previously, but does Shaw have any interest for you?
Totally. I like the offense as well. And we know that if things do get clicking for him, he can have a massive week or two.
Yeah.
And there's only 4 weeks left. So
that's all we need, right?
If it's a 4 week season and he has a massive half season, you know what I mean? So I like that call.
Yeah. He's nice name call. I really wanted to buy late in drafts. I think you got him probably after pick 300, 350. He may have even been free in most leagues. So it's kind of fun to see him turn things around a little bit. So you talked about Brandon Belt in that next tier, Matthew. Before we get to the super high end, you got Brandon Belt, you got Luis Urias. We've already talked about Sam Haggerty. We've already talked about Brad Miller. You've also got a guy like J.P. Crawford on the Mariners. Who sticks out into that? Probably isn't super free, but maybe a little bit more low end, probably spending under $100 from a FAB perspective.
Yeah. So Sam Haggerty would be my guy for speed. And then if you need batting average, I would go to Luis Urias. If you need power, I would go to Brandon Belt. And if you need RBIs, I would go to Brad Miller. How about that?
Okay. No, I like it.
Make it easy.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're broken kind of down into categories. Belt and Miller can kind of be the same. They're both hit in the middle of a lineup, and they're both providing a little bit of power and RBIs. So
yeah.
Runs as well because of where they're at in the lineup. So I like both of those guys probably more. It's hard because Sam Haggerty too. So I would – okay, so let's rank those four.
Yep.
It's kind of hard because of the speed. But so Sam Haggerty for sure if you need the speed. But then I would go Belt, then Miller, then Urias. Yeah,
I think I agree. Unfortunately, I think I agree with you. And I'm not trying to be vanilla because we disagree plenty, sure. But I think I agree on all those. So,
yeah, I might have some of these. I'm trying to figure out some of these allocations here because the next person that we have right above him is J.P. Crawford. And so he's the leadoff hitter for the Mariners, and he's El Fuego right now. And he's also stealing bases. So if you're a leadoff hitter and you're stealing bases and you're not a detriment in the batting average department, that's a solid combination. So if you aren't desperate for power, I think teams that are kind of hungry for runs, especially because he's hitting leadoff and he has five stolen bases now, runs and speed, I think J.P. Crawford costs just a little bit more than Haggerty because of how hot he is and being the leadoff hitter there every day.
No, I agree. And then let's talk about that next group, Matthew, because it's two guys kind of in a similar situation. Gavin Lux and Nick Madrigal, both now called up. Gavin Lux came up as the 28th man in a doubleheader, and he's been called up, it looks like, permanently, which if you do the math or check the boxes on what you were saying earlier – could mean that Justin Turner is now officially going to the injured list. So that could be interesting as far as what that does for the Dodgers. And then Nick Madrigal, also up now, been interesting because Danny Mendick's been playing second base for the White Sox, who arguably are the league's best offense clicking. That's a team you just want to buy shares of from that perspective. How are you prioritizing bidding? I know being a Dodgers fan, and you were very high on Gavin Lux this year, presumably the Dodgers are calling up Gavin Lux to play a lot. Does that mean, does that push, let's say, a guy like Max Muncy, if Turner's out, to maybe third base full time? Do they play Gavin Lux at second or slide him to first? What are they going to do positional wise? And what's the impact if Turner has to go to the IL?
Yeah, Gavin Lux will definitely play second base, but I think Dave Roberts did. I don't need to think. He mentioned that he could only be, you know, that strong side of a platoon because they do like using Kike and Chris Taylor against left-handed pitching. So let's just say that Gavin Lux is the full-time, you know, strong side of the platoon and plays second base. They will likely move Max Muncy or keep Muncy at first base and then slide, I think, Edwin Rios over at third base. And then when they give Rios days off, if he is activated, they could move Muncy over to third base, and then they can move Beedy over to first base. Or they can use all three if they want to go real left-handed heavy and go Muncy at first, Beedy in the outfield, and Rios at third. And they still have the DH option as well. So, like we mentioned earlier with Beedy and Rios, it just there's so many different ways that the Dodgers can, you know, attack you and kill you. So Lux, I think he's the better hitter than Nick Madrigal. But Nick Madrigal, if you need batting average, he's hitting low in the White Sox lineup. But I don't think that's even really going to matter if they're going to keep slugging the ball like they are. So the knock on Madrigal would be power and where he's hitting in the lineup. But that's going to go for the same for Gavin Lux. He has the power and he has the speed, so he has both. But he's also going to hit pretty low in that Dodgers lineup. But the Dodgers lineup's elite like the White Sox lineup. So those lineups turn over a little bit more than you might be accustomed to. So I don't know if the position or where they hit in the lineup is going to knock them too much. So I have them both equal at $100 to $150, 10 to 15% of your budget. And if I had to choose, I would go with Gavin Lux because okay. I think you're going to get more pop. And I think both of them can steal bases.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd go Lux.
Okay. No, I think that makes sense. I think Lux is going to be an interesting case. I mean, that White Sox lineup is a really solid one. So certainly, you know, you want shares of that. But I think, you know, we're going to see what Lux is capable of doing. And obviously he looked like he was a pretty strong bet to start the year. So we'll see how he performs. It certainly is an offense. If he can bat at the bottom of that lineup and get things turned over, it's certainly a powerful one. Let's move over to pitchers. Cause similarly, as you talked about earlier, a lot more arms, as we touch on just overall a bunch of different names, I think in the low end guys, Matthew, we virtually on the $1 to $9, we've basically touched on anybody or almost everybody. Is there anything I'm missing on the very, very low end guys that you want to highlight?
No, not really. Freddy Peralta, if he's available, we've just seen him be pretty electric out of the bullpen. So if you're mm-hmm. desperate for ratios and strikeouts and you know, you're kind of hurting in that department and you realize this upcoming week where you go and set your lineups that the starting pitchers that you're rolling out, you know, they're struggling or the matchups are really bad or the ballpark or whatever, that's kind of has you telling yourself like, I really don't want to start that guy. Then Freddy Peralta is someone that you can plug in and, just kind of, you know, plug in and move on because of the strikeouts and hopefully he can vulture a win. Other than him, no, Reynaldo Lopez, looked a little bit better in his last outing, but I think his next starts against the Twins. So that's kind of a difficult one, but if you're really desperate, you know, then maybe you go that route. And then Jacob Junis, I believe, is going to be a two-stepper against both of them at home against the Indians and the White Sox. Yep. I'm not very high on him, but, you know, if you're desperate for that volume and you need somebody, so I don't think he'll cost a lot and he has two starts.
Sure.
So that's about it. Zach Eflin looked good in his last outing. He's available in less than 50% of leagues. So he can be somebody as well, you know, if you need a starting pitcher. Those guys that I just mentioned, too, they're not readily available in those 15-team leagues. So, in the 12 teams, though, I think they're decent options. And I want to say his next start is against the Nationals. Eflin. So it's, you know, could be tough. But I'm sorry. It's actually against the Mets. He just pitched yesterday. So.
Oh, okay.
That's apologies. Yeah. A little better. Yeah.
All right. Moving up, a couple of names that stick out. Diego Castillo, I think, was called on and got back-to-back saves for the Rays this week. So maybe that situation's firming up a little bit. Tyler Molly of the Reds has been very dynamic lately. Very low low cost, but has been a significant contributor. You've got a guy like Dakota Hudson who's thrown the baseball pretty well for the Cardinals this year. How are you prioritizing maybe the 1-5% arms in a 12-teamer? We touched on a guy like Alex Young. We talked about Rafael Dolis in the 15-teamers. How do you guys like these in a 12-teamer? Where are you spending up, Matthew?
Diego Castillo wasn't mentioned in 15 teams because of his ownership. So yep. I would go with him because I like his stuff the best for those relievers. And we're finally seeing that's like the most consistency we've seen all year.
Yeah.
With the Rays, when we saw Castillo get back-to-backs, and I was real eager to see what would have happened yesterday. It was a close game, but then they ended up getting an additional run or whatnot and ended up winning 4-0, so we didn't see a save opportunity. But I would, you know, you still need to temper your expectations with Diego Castillo because it is the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen, but I like his stuff. I was kind of even at the beginning of the year rolling him out,
yeah.
Not expecting him to be the full-time closer or anything, but maybe, you know, luck into one or two, but that didn't happen at the beginning of the year. But I was kind of under the pretense that that would have happened. And I like his ratios and strikeouts. So Diego Castillo, I don't think will hurt you. Tyler Molly, you touched on. I like him. He's not available in 15 teams either, but in those 12 teams, I like him more than the starting pitchers we mentioned right above him. And then Yusei Kikuchi is going to be a two-stepper this week, I believe. And his two starts are... Or no, is it going to be two starts? It might not be now because the schedule got really screwed up. I'm sorry. Dakota Hudson is going to be the two-stepper. And I swear. So Dakota Hudson could pitch for like 12 years and have a 3.14 ERA. And I'm still like, nope, I don't trust it. Nope, I don't trust it. And I could be wrong for like a decade. Can you touch on Dakota Hudson for the people? Because I can't.
Yeah, he's a frustrating one. He's a guy that it was kind of like when Joe Kelly was a starter for the Cardinals. He has electric stuff, a ton of run on his two-seamer, but he just doesn't really have secondary offerings, which is why I think, Matthew, you're often skeptical of the numbers that Dakota Hudson puts up. He looks terrible from an advanced metrics perspective for, you know, things like FIP or Sierra because he doesn't generate a lot of swings and misses. Now, where those metrics do love him is he gets a ton of ground balls. So he doesn't give up a lot of fly balls, which is great. But his stuff, he just doesn't have that wipeout pitch. So what happens when you watch Dakota Hudson start is he's throwing 95 to 98. But he just gets ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. And if he does get the ball up, it gets absolutely demolished. So I'm with you. He's one that I also struggle with at times. It seems challenging when you watch a guy like Dakota Hudson because the raw – when you watch him pitch, the raw pitching ability he has looks amazing. But it just kind of leaves you wanting more. So he's the guy I think you can throw at. I would tell you personally, I am concerned with how poor the Cardinals' offense is. They were 21st in Team WOBA last year. They're 21st again this year. They just don't score a lot of runs, and I just don't know that he's going to be in a great spot to win you a lot of games, to be totally honest.
Okay, cool. So we're on the same page there. Back to Yusei Kikuchi real quick. So I dug into his, you know, because the schedule, a lot of pitchers got pushed back a day or two because of the protests and the games being postponed. But Kikuchi is in line to go against two home starts, actually, against the A's and the Rangers. And both of those teams have high strikeout rates against left-handed pitching. So the Athletics have the second highest K rate against lefties, and that's at 28.5%. And the Rangers are sixth worst at 25.1%. And Kikuchi, we've seen the velocity uptick and the strikeout rate increase. I like him this week. And if he's available in any of my leagues, I'm looking to add him and I'm looking to start him.
Mm, okay. Yeah. Yep. Interesting. We'll see how he goes. You know, that's going to be he's another guy, Matthew, for me. He actually possesses the swing and miss stuff and he's got great velocity. he just seems like he hasn't been getting it done in recent memory, but it's clearly there, right? It's he's got the ability to get it done. So I like the call. We'll see how it works out. It's definitely.
Yeah, I'm high on him this week.
Yeah, no,
to
I like
put it.
It
lightly. Yeah, I that'll be something we can touch on next week to see how much I hate, love or hate him. Yeah, so it's going to be one or the other, I'm sure.
And then Matthew, in the 6-9% and the 10-15%, I think we touched on all these arms in the 15 teams.
Yes.
But anything additional to be aware of for a 12 team format?
No, just that it's 12 teams, not 15-team leagues. So we know that the budget allocation in FAB doesn't need to be as extreme or aggressive towards these closers. So whenever you're doing FAB, don't just copy and paste your FAB budgets and go, oh, I want Daniel Bard in this league for $74, and in the 12-team league, I want him for $74, because that's not the case. More people have closers and saves, and they're not as desperate or eager to purchase these guys, and so you don't need to go as hard in the 12-team leagues.
Yep. Okay. Anybody to highlight in two-steppers that we haven't touched on either before we wrap things up with the show?
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me on that. I like to talk about some of these guys moving forward. As one that could actually be interesting, I need to check his ownership. So I do actually have him, and we just skipped him. My mistake, J.A. Happ. He's been pitching a lot better lately, and he's a two-step. So I think I kind of want to monitor him. If he's available and I'm desperate for volume, I would probably go there. His last two starts, so over 13 innings, he's only allowed one run. The strikeouts aren't high or anything like that, but you know that you can get the win with Happ. And he went seven innings in that last outing, so he's able to go deep, and he's getting two starts against the Rays and the Orioles. So I think he's going to be somebody to add, I guess, so to speak. But
yeah,
less than Kikuchi. I like Kikuchi more this week, so like, kind of put them toe-to-toe and see who does better this week. Ian Anderson, we've talked about him. I'm excited to see what he can do against two tough matchups against the Red Sox and Nationals, being young and coming off a successful first start against the Yankees. And let's see. Kwang Hyun Kim. I'd like to see him get knocked around by the Reds and by the Cubs. but he gets two starts as well. So, yeah, I think some of these two-steppers, just like last week we touched on, be cautious of some of these two-steppers. They can hurt you pretty bad. One last one, actually, a guy I do like that was supposed to be a two-stepper this week but wasn't. He got put a start pushback. That's Alex Young, the young, talented pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He gets two road starts against the Dodgers and the Giants. If I have him, I'm actually going to start him. We've seen his pitch count continue to trend in the right direction. It's going up, and that's also going up in innings as well. So I like Alex Young. He's a talented lefty, and I would also want to add him. And he was actually part of that 12 piece that we missed right there in that 1-5% with Dakota Hudson and Kikuchi. So
He's
somebody as well. I'm done talking. tell us who you want to, if there's anybody in the two steps, and close us out.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anybody new. I mean, I think we've touched on all the arms. It's going to be an interesting week because there are some names that we've touched on that I'm very curious about. I'm also curious, Matthew, how this trade deadline shapes up. It's going to be hard because I honestly expect a pretty quiet trade deadline because I just don't think there's going to be a lot of GMs out there that are gambling on this shortened season. So that'll do it for me. I appreciate the dialogue. It's always fun talking FAB. Get your bids ready. We will be back this week. We've got our guest this week is Ariel Cohen on our strategy session, and then we'll be back midweek as well. So Matthew, thanks as always, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.